কাটতে বলছে। গৌর প্রেমানন্দে আমাদের ভাই নাট্য
to be here at this special occasion to formally welcome His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Vedanta Narayan Maharaja on his first visit to our country, South Africa. Guruji will already be well known to Hare Krishna devotees and the Hindu community in South Africa and indeed beyond. I read with great interest that Guruji is one of the leading teachers of pure bhakti in the world and has authored many best-selling books in many languages. I know that they are widely read here too in our country, and there's been a growing interest in Guruji's ideas and of course in the practice of yoga in a stressful world. To follow a Hindu spiritual path, I understand, is to follow bhakti, or dedication to a personal deity of love, mercy, and grace who calls for devotion and surrender. This concept is familiar to me as it is similar in practice, if not in theology, to the Christian concept of salvation. Hindus prefer the word devotion, a personal response to the feeling that one is separated from the ground of one's being. Although the Hindu concept of God is far different from the traditional Western understanding, in bhakti, a chosen deity manifests itself to the individual and calls for personal devotion. The deity is the only one expression of the divine who is an unknowable and impossible, in fact, divine. In essence, bhakti revolves around the philosophy of complete submission to God in the form of physical, mental, and emotional devotion. It promotes a life beyond the physical world, which is ruled by materialism and selfishness. It is a state of self-actualization where all other needs but in devotion to God seem meaningless. Throughout your life, ever since you were awarded the title Friend of the Devotees, your divine grace, you have drawn upon the universal spiritual insight that our real enjoyment is found itself in the spring of all pleasure, which is God. In the Christian faith, the Westminster Catechism expresses this wonderfully with the words, "What is man's chief end? To glorify God and enjoy Him forever," unquote. And I believe this sentiment resonates through all faiths, not just mine. So, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow devotees, in our respective faith teachings, we find the keys to solving our society's most intractable challenges. The spiritual and practical values which Guruji promotes will, if observed, help us to eliminate the ills that continue to blight the lives of our people. HIV/AIDS, poverty, unemployment, preventable disease and ill health, and other forms of social deprivation. Guruji has provided insightful guidance and loving shelter to all, irrespective of color, irrespective of creed, irrespective of class, who come to him seeking these eternal truths. I myself was delighted to visit the largest Hindu temple in the world in New Delhi in 2008. Which is serving to promote these truths, and the visit left me enthralled. And one of the privileges of my life, Your Grace, has been the number of occasions on which I've had the privilege of worshiping my Maker with the Hare Krishna devotees. And that includes the official opening of the temple in Chatsworth, which I had the privilege of officially opening. With these short remarks, Your Divine Grace, it is therefore, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of all of us and our country, it gives me great pleasure to formally welcome Guruji and extend to him a warm and proud South African welcome. I hope his grace will feel as welcome among us as I felt in India. Welcome, Your Divine Grace. Our country is blessed by your visit to our province of KwaZulu-Natal. We'll be privileged to listen your message to us. And it is a privilege for me, and I thank my fellow KwaZulu-Natalian devotees who thought that I should have the privilege of welcoming you to our province, Your Grace.
Thank you. South Africa, where we welcome one of the greatest living devotees of the Lord that is present on this planet presently. His Divine Grace, Sri Srimad Bhaktivedanta Damodar Goswami Maharaj, is the disciple of Om Vishnupa Sri Srimad Bhaktivedanta Keshav Goswami Maharaj, who is one of the foremost leading disciples of Om Vishnupa Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. Shri Narayan Maharaj was born in a village named Tiwaripur, located near the bank of the sacred Ganga in Bihar, in Bharat. He was born on the auspicious Amavas day of February 16, 1921, into a very religious Brahmin family. In February of 1947, he had his first meeting with his spiritual master, Sri Bhakti Prajan Keshav Maharaj, in Sri Navadvip Dham in West Bengal. Since that time, he has dedicated his entire life to his beloved Gurudev and the philosophy given by the disciplic succession of the Brahma, Madhav, Gaudiya, Sampradaya, headed by Lord Brahma. That same disciplinary succession has continued unbroken until this present day. Srila Gurudev has traveled extensively along with Srila Keshav Maharaj on preaching tours throughout India. Over the next 5 years, and in 1952, on Gaur Purnim, his beloved Gurudev awarded him initiation into the sacred order of sannyas. On the order of his Gurudev, he began to translate the sacred scriptures of Bharat from Sanskrit and Bengali into the native language Hindi, and subsequently, his disciples have translated them into English, Spanish, Russian, Chinese, Portuguese, French, Italian, and many other languages. A significant relationship in the life of Srila Narayan Maharaj was his association with His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Maharaj, the world-famous preacher of Gaudiya Vaishnavism and the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, today known as ISKCON. They first met in Calcutta in 1948, and over many years, by having regular devotional exchanges and deep discussions of Vaishnava philosophy, Srila Narayan Maharaj and Srila Swami Maharaj Prabhupada developed a very intimate relationship. Srila Narayan Maharaj regards him both as his instructing spiritual master as well as his close friend. For nearly 50 years, Srila Narayan Maharaj has preached the sacred conception of unconditional love of Sri Radha and Krishna throughout India. And in 1996, has traveled around the world 28 times, giving seminars and lectures. Srila Narayan Maharaj has demonstrated and exemplified the pure, unadulterated life of utter dedication and loving service to his Gurudev and the divine couple, Sri Sri Radha Krishna. He has opened many temples in India and throughout the world that care for the spiritual welfare of thousands of people. In addition, he has committed himself to providing free medical facilities, gurukuls for children, food distribution, Sanskrit education, cow protection, and restoration of the holy places of the holy land of Bharat. Ladies and gentlemen, we can go on forever. But what I've actually described here might be said to be like licking the honey from outside the bottle and not present to you the taste and the nectar, something that is deep within the Shastra and that can only be revealed by a pure devotee of the Lord. Because the devotee of the Lord actually would be able to unlock this treasure house. And now present to you, ladies and gentlemen, Srila Gurudev.
And sending to the lotus feet of my Siksha Guru, Nitya Lila Prabhu Vishnu Bhava, Stokas Vishnu Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nara. My dear Sannyasi Brahmachari, my dear chief guest, leader of party, yeah, and all devotees. First of all, I'm very impressed by
what name?
Chief Bhutalesi.
What name?
Prince Bhutalesi.
Prince Bhutalesi.
Bhutalesi.
Prince
Bhutalesi.
Yeah.
Is very generous. So, my Dhanyabad Kiti. Dhanyabad.
Thank you.
For my many, many thanks to
you,
Prince Mahoda. One thing I want to tell you all, that in this old age of 90 years, by the help of Vaishnava, I'm traveling over the whole world. Why? Really, all the countries and persons are in the prison of Yog Mahamaya. We think that we are now liberated and rolling over our countries. But this is wrong. We are bound to obey the order of Maya. First of all, we should think, and not this body. The freedom of body or anything is nothing. We are so part and parcel of Supreme Lord. You should know also, love is God. God is love, and love is God. Do you understand the meaning of this? What is the meaning of love? To love God means to love all the creation done by God. Also, cows, buffaloes, goats, and all the animals are son and daughter of God. Then why you kill them and eat them? If you love God, then why not love him to the sons and daughters of God? You must, then you should not eat meat. God has made a rule. Not meat, M-E-A-T. To whom you are eating, they are standing in a road to take the revenge and they will cut you and eat you. You must know what you do. Reaction must come. If you do like this, oh, both hands will suffer somewhat. So, I have my tools to say that if he was free from Britain, France, Spain and other countries, but really you are not free. You are in the prison of Mahamaya. So you are obeying the order of Maya. That you are not soul and part and parcel of God. But, oh, you are this body. If you will eat delicious food, a thali many?
Plate.
Plate of $10,000. Oh, you will be very happy. If you will drink, oh, you will be very. You will take meat. And we are following the orders of the gentleman. This is not freedom. Freedom means coming out from the clutches of Maya and we are realizing that you are part and parcel of Supreme Lord who is always happy. If you will realize so, then you will realize God. And what is God? How is God? He has said, if God has no sin, then in Bible it has been written, God created man after his own image. What is the meaning of own image? If God has no form, no shape, no qualities, nothing, then what? What is God? Nothing. We should know all these things. God has four qualities. He is very merciful. He has all the qualities. And he has invested his all power, mercy and all the qualities in his names. Any name, God. God is not name, but it is like those who is creator of this world,
generator
and
operator, destroyer.
Then this is God. G, generator, O, operator, D, destructor. This is God. But what is the name if he has failed, if he has fallen? Oh, then it is Krishna, his name. Once
Jesus Christ
went to India in his young age And he went to Vrindavan, Puri, Jagannath Puri and so many places. And there he heard Krishna, oh, the Supreme Lord. And then he went to Puri, then they called Krishna Krishna. Then he returned back to his country, he began to tell Christ. So Krishna and Christ is not different. So many similarities from Christianity and our Sanatana Vedic Dharma, Vaishnava Dharma. Like same, only Christians, they don't accept the form of God. But meaning is hidden. Meaning is that he has no worldly body. Who takes birth and destroys. But transcendental birth, transcendental name, transcendental qualities he has. So Christianity and Vaishnavism of India, not two different, only very similar. But we are proud to say that we are best Christians and pure Christians. Because we obey the order of God that you should not take meat, not wine, not meat, not drinking, smoking, even smoking. We should not take. So our preaching is this in whole world without caste and creed of anything. For all, our door is open for all. This religion is, our religion is not only for Indian any group. It is for all in whole world, even in transcendental world. There we serve Krishna, we can serve Krishna like a friend, like a son, like a most beloved, so many ways. And then you can realize that what is happiness, what is this transcendental things, what we are going to preach over whole world. And that is why I am very successful in my preaching, that everywhere they are giving up meat, wine, smoking, drinking, everything. And they are taking Harinam and chanting Harinam, and they are now happy. Here also, this is my first time, but I see so many devotees here, about 500, and also in yesterday in class 500. So I am very much, I think that I am successful. Now, we have begun our classes, Bhagavatam. Once in India, in Naimisharanya, 80,000 of rishis and munis were gathered there. There were discussions that Iron Age is coming. Ladies and men will give up their chastity and all kinds of religion. And ladies will be called beautiful only bride
hair style.
And no chastity. So coloring
lips
by color. Not by health. And like a prostitute. Male will also be same. And it will increase in Iron Age. A lady is not actually lady. who has not divorced his husband about 20
times.
29.
20 times. Especially in Kali Yuga.
Sons don't know who is my father, who is my mother. This will be, and they will think that, oh, we are free, free country, controlling our countries and everything, but not controlling himself, his soul. So they are discussing how to save from this iron age. And then, at once, a very good saint, highest classes of learned saint came. His name was
Sutta
Goswami. Disciple of
Sukadev Goswami.
Very famous Sukadev Goswami. Oh, they respected. Like you respected me more than they respected that rishi. And told, you are a great scholar and learned person. You have read from your, learned from your Sukadeva Goswami Guru and Vyasdev and others. How soul can be happy? He did not tell that how we can be happy, this body, but how our soul will be happy. Try to understand, body and soul is not same thing. Soul has come from God, Krishna. So when soul will meet again with Krishna, then he will be happy. So they asked Sut Goswami that from your memory collect all these things and in brief you should tell us. If we are
faithful
to God, and then he began to tell. Shabai punsam paro dharmo jato bhakti rato kaje ahe tukka bhavahita ja bhakti purushottam. Shabai punsam, from all living entity, it is highest topmost of religions. To serve Supreme Lord. Continuation without break of honey. Continuous. And in the guidance of Guru. And without any worldly desire. In the other slope, Srila Rupa Goswami has defined bhakti. This is called bhakti. Anna bhilashita sunnam gyan karma adi anabhritam krishna anusilanam bhakti uttama. In brief, very brief and clear words, he used to define this. Not so
elaborate.
Gurave Gopachandra Radhikaya Tadale Krishna Krishna Bhakta Tadavakta Namo. So first of all, I offer my obeisances to Sri Gurudev, Om Vishnupad, Srishima Bhakta, Narayana Goswami Maharaj, Sannyasis, Brahmacharis, Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis, ladies and gentlemen, His Holiness, thank you for coming. So Sri Gurudev has ordered me to try to describe something about what is real devotion. What most people call devotion in this world is not pure devotion. It's mixed with some material desire or some other desire. Therefore, it cannot be pure. Just like chocolate. If you mix it with sand, that chocolate is chocolate, but it's not completely relishable. Therefore, bhakti should be pure. It should not have any contamination. Therefore, what is the definition of that bhakti? Sri Rupa Goswami has described. Anyabhigasita sunyam jnana karmayanavatam anukulena krishnanam sriranam bhakti uttama. What is uttam bhakti, or the topmost type of devotion? It should be continuously performed for the satisfaction of Krishna. That means by body, mind, words, and also by feelings. We should perform all our activities for the satisfaction of Krishna. It should be continuously performed. Just like you take a jar of honey and you pour it from the top, it comes in an unbroken stream. Not that I should just go to church once a week and then do nonsense the other 7.5, other 6 days. Devotion should be continuously performed. Also, and most importantly, it should be done only for the satisfaction of Krishna. There should be no business mentality. So many people, they go to the temple and they pray, they go to the church, they go to the mosque, and what are they praying for? Oh, Jaya Jagadish Hari, give me a house by the sea. They are praying for so many material things from God. So this is like a business. Therefore, Rupa Goswami said, Anya Vilasita Sunya. Devotion should be performed without any type of material desire. Some people pray to God, oh God, give me good health. Oh God, give my wife good health. Oh God, give me a new wife. Oh God, give me a pay rise. So this is all not pure devotion. But still, they are approaching Krishna, they are approaching God, so some touch of devotion is there, but it's not pure because it's mixed with other desires. Devotion should not be covered by anything. Just like if you have a light, but you cover it by a bowl or some box, then the light is there, but it's not manifested. Therefore, devotion should not be covered by karma, means materialistic activity. For example, some people, we wake up, we eat, then we go, we catch the bus, we go to work, all day we're working, then we come back, we watch them. Whole day is passed in material activities. That means bhakti has now become covered by materialistic activity. This will be a fault. And also, so many people want to become one with God. So the question comes, if you become one with God, then how can you serve Him? It's impossible. To serve someone, there has to be two things, you and the person whom you're serving. But if you become one with God, then that service is destroyed. Therefore, bhakti sometimes is covered by materialistic desire, materialistic activity, and sometimes bhakti is covered by a desire to become one with Bhagavan. This is called jnana. Therefore, Rupa Goswami said bhakti should be free from any touch of materialistic desire. It should not be covered by materialistic activity. It should not be covered by a desire to become one with the Supreme Lord. It should be performed continuously in an unbroken manner, simply for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. This is called uttam bhakti. So the spiritual master, if he is a bona fide spiritual master, he should be the living manifestation of this mood of devotion to Sri Krishna. Therefore, because now we are in a mixed condition, we are not performing pure devotion, tasma guru prapadyeta vidyasa sri vrima. Therefore, you must come to Guru, and you must respect Him, you must hear His words, and you must follow His instructions. Not that the words of Guru Dev go in one ear, and then come out the other ear, with nothing in between. Because if you follow the instructions of the Guru, then the mood of Guru will come in you. That's a good thing if the Guru is pure, and if the Guru is not pure, that is not a very desirable thing. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says, Anu Sivanam. The main thing about devotion in our present stage, it should be performed under the guidance of a perfected soul. And then by following His instructions, that mood of perfect loving service to Krishna will manifest in the heart, otherwise it will not manifest. Thank you.
In this connection, further we are going to tell that Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of Supreme Lord. He divided Vedas in four classes. He wrote Brahma Sutra, essence of all Vedic literature. But it was too hard to understand. Then he made so many Qurans in easy language. Also, he made Srimad Bhagavatam in which 18 adhyayas,
18
chapters is called Gita, world famous book, Gita. But yet he was not satisfied. In the meantime, his Gurudev, Narad Rishi, came there and he told, "You did not seem to be happy. You have done everything. You have done so many vast literature that in thousands of lives a man cannot finish it. But you are not happy. Why? Gurudev, I don't know this thing. If a rogi,
patient,
does not know what rogue is like, and then he goes to any
doctor,
very good doctor, and he tells that, oh, this is your rogue.
This is.
And give medicine. So Gurudev, you will decide why I am not happy. Oh, I know. You have told about dharma, artha, kama, moksha. English word is it?
Religion, mundane religiosity, desire for accumulating wealth, sense gratification, and ultimately liberation.
But if you have not glorified Krishna, Supreme Lord, you have not written anywhere the sweet pastimes of Krishna, that even Supreme Lord was binded, unlimited God was binded by his mother Yashoda. Not only that, have you written that Krishna is telling that Napareham Nirvanta Sanyuga? Oh gopis, for me, you have left your houses, your husbands, your father, mother, your chastity, your everything left for me. How I can repay? I cannot repay. Have you written? Have you written the love, highest love of gopis, of Radhika, Bhramargi? Have you go? Gopi Gita and others? Nothing. Gurudev, I don't know. Oh, go at once to your ashram and be in samadhi.
In trance.
In trance. And then you will see the whole sweet pastimes of Krishna. And then he, after departure of Narad Rishi, he became in samadhi and saw this whole sweet pastimes of. He saw Mother Yashoda, Nanda, friends, Gopi, all his associates he saw. And then what he saw? He saw that those who are forgetting Supreme Lord, they are coming down in the clutches of Maya, and those who are remembering and chanting Krishna name and doing devotional services to God, oh, they are liberated and they are going to grow Vrindavan. And then he wrote a book named Srimad Bhagavatam. Jasyavayu Suryamanayam Krishna Paramukhushe Bhakti Rupadhate Punsa. So, more by reading
this book,
lamentation, so more
illusion
and
fear
will go forever. And you will be in Vrindavan and serving Krishna in so many ways. And you will be really happy. So, and then he teach this Srimad Bhagavat first to his son Sukadeva Goswami. This was the first sitting of
Bhagavatam
in Parikshit
Maharaj Assembly.
So, then, So, what he defined bhakti, anna vilasita sunna, it has gradation. Lower, higher, highest, most highest. So many kinds of devotees. All the devotees are not same. Perhaps Christianity also. Gradation must be there in schools, colleges. So only gradation. So we have told about
Prahlad.
How tolerance was he? His father wanted to kill, but he was praying for her father that he should be happy. Without being a tolerance, we cannot serve Krishna, Supreme Lord. So there was a Bhakt Ambarish, and Shyam Rani will speak about it.
Maharaj, give her the wireless mic.
Oh. Oh, Maharaj. You can speak on her charitra.
Om First, I offer my unlimited obeisances and the dust of the lotus feet of my most worshipful Dushyudev. Literally the Pravishna Om Vishnupad, a stove to the Satishri Shiman, Srila Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada, and the same unlimited obeisances and the dust of the lotus feet of my most worshipful Shishupade. Om Vishnupad, a stove to the Satishri Shiman, Srila Bhakti Vedanta Narayana Goswami Maharaj. To all of our disciplined succession, all the sannyasi gun, all the Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis, and all honored guests, especially Your Excellency. Srila Gurudev has ordered me to speak about the glories of Maharaj Ambarish. Maharaj Ambarish, in ancient times, was the king of the entire planet. But he wasn't at all attached to his wealth, to his unlimited treasury, to his family, to ornaments, clothing, profit, adoration, and distinction. He considered the entire wealth of his vast kingdom of the entire planet to be no more important than a stone. Just as when one has a dream, everything present in the dream is meant to be destroyed as soon as the person wakes up. So he considered his whole kingdom to be material and therefore temporary. Because of his devotion to the Lord, he had no attachment. So Maharaj Amrish, along with his entire kingdom, wife and kingdom, used to observe a very, very important Vaishnava holiday called Ekadasi. And he observed that Ekadasi, vow of Ekadasi, so strictly that he would not even take water. So now it was time to break the fasting of Ekadasi. So as usual, he would worship his deity. Although he was the king of the entire planet, he left the management to his ministers, and he engaged his mind always in thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord. He engaged his eyes in seeing the deity of the Lord. He engaged his nostrils in smelling the incense offered to the Lord and the tulsi leaves offered to the Lord. He engaged his legs in walking to the temple of the Lord. He engaged his hands in touching the pure devotees of the Lord. All of his senses were engaged in the service of the Lord. And because he knew the duty of the king, all of his citizens were thus engaged, and his whole land of the planet was happy because they followed the king's instructions of Krishna consciousness. So now it was the day after Ekadasi. So the king worshipped his deity, dressed the deities, offered prasadam, worshipped the brahmanas, gave in charity millions of cows to the brahmanas, fed the brahmanas. Now it was time, almost time, for him to break his Ekadasi. So, just at that moment, when he was going to break the Ekadasi, a very powerful sage named Durvasamuni came to his palace. Brahma Rishi, very, very powerful sage. And so Maharaj Amrish gave the sage the worshipful seat, honored him with all paraphernalia, and invited him to take prasadam. So the sage agreed to the proposal, but said that he was first going to the Jamuna, because the king's palace, his kingdom, his home, was in Mathura, Vrindavan, the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Sri Krishna, where he performed unlimited pastimes. So the sage was going to take bath in the Jamuna, and meanwhile, the time was passing, and only a few moments was left before he was to break the fast. According to Shastra injunction, the breaking of the fast at the right time is very important for the completion of the vow. The vow of Ekadasi and the benefits of Ekadasi, which is that one gets pure bhakti and freedom from all miseries of material existence. He gets saved from hellish conditions. All opulence is at his doorstep. And very significant, insignificant. So he was knowing that, how can I take prasadam first before honoring my guest? He knew all the religious principles of the king. Now it's the religious principle of the king to honor a brahmana. And if I don't honor that brahmana, well, I'll go to hell for that offense. But if I don't take some prasadam to break the fast, then even if I'm in heaven, I'll be in worse hell because I won't have bhakti. Bhakti, believe me, Ekadasi is the manifestation of bhakti devi. Krishna himself was thinking, these fallen souls in all the planetary systems, they're suffering from so many hellish conditions. What can I do for them? They're so averse to me. Yes, I will become a day, Ekadasi. I myself will become a day. a time period. And anybody who observes the simple rulings of that time period, he can attain me and become free from all sins. So if I take the prasadam, then I'll get bhakti. If I honor that Brahman, I lose my bhakti if I wait and not observe the breaking of the fast. So he was very intelligent, more so than a Brahman because of his pure devotion. So he suggested to the Brahmanas, what shall I do? If I take Charanamrita, the water that bathed the lotus feet of the Lord, that's just taking water, and water is considered fasting and not fasting. So he took some Charanamrita, and just after that, that powerful sage Rishi returned to his palace. And because he had mystic powers, he knew that Maharaj Amrish had taken the water. So being very puffed up in pride that I am a Brahmana, he is only a king and a householder, and I am the renounced daughter. And he offended me. He invited me for prasadam, for a meal, and he ate something, or rather drank something before me. So in his fury, he used his mystic power against a devotee, and we'll find out in a moment what happened. He grabbed a lock of hair from his dreadlocks and threw it at the king. And all of a sudden, that hair turned into a big, gigantic, fiery demoness named Kritja. And that demoness grabbed her trident and ran towards the king. And what did the king do? He knew that Rake Krishna Marike, Mari Krishna Rake, whoever Krishna wants to kill, nobody can save. And if Krishna wants to save, nobody can kill. So he was simply absorbed with tears in his eyes, not afraid, not sad, but absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord in complete ecstasy. Now the Lord had already made a promise and given the king the protection of his Sudarshan Chakra, his ultimate weapon that he uses to illuminate the whole universe and destroy the whole cosmic manifestation when the time comes. So now, under the will of the Lord, under the order of the Lord, that Sudarshan Chakra came and instantly burnt that fire demoness to ashes, and then immediately ran after the sage. That sage was not like Maharaj Amrish, not fearless, not surrendered to the Lord. So he immediately ran to his life, for his life. Because of his mystic powers, he was able to go into the sky, into mountain caves, into the ocean, into heavenly planets, to flee from the Sudarshan Chakra. But he always felt the fire of the Sudarshan Chakra almost touching his back. Finally, he went to the highest heavenly planet, Brahma Loka, and begged, "Oh Lord Brahma, please save me from this fiery weapon." Lord Brahma told him, Brahma is the highest demigod, the controller of all other demigods. And he told him, just by the mere flicker of his eyebrow, the Lord destroys innumerable universes. How can I do anything to defeat his will? So then Maharaj Durvasa Muni went to Lord Shiva, who resides between the material and spiritual worlds, who is the powerful destroyer of the entire universe. And he said, "Oh Lord Shiva, please save me." Lord Shiva said, "How can I? In fact," he said it from a distance, "don't come near me. I don't want to be known that I know you." Even Brahma and I and all the demigods are controlled by the Lord's energy. He is the creator and destroyer sitting by his breath of innumerable universes. What can I do against his will? Better to go to the Lord himself and beg him for forgiveness. So Maharaj Amrish went, Durvasa Muni went to the Brahmapriya Vaikuntha planet of the Lord himself, the Vaikuntha planet, the spiritual world within this universe. And he begged the Lord, "Oh, please save me from your insurpassable chakra." So the Lord said, "I take it that when you offended my pure devotee, that you offended me. I'm not independent, although so many demigods, Shiva, Brahma, Durga, Ganesh, Kartikeya, although they all are dependent on me, I depend on my pure devotee. I cannot enjoy any transcendental bliss without the association of my pure devotee. So I consider that when you offended my pure devotee, when you tried to kill him, you were trying to kill me. Why? Because where do I reside? I reside only in the hearts of my devotee, and my devotee resides only in my heart. I know no one but my devotee, just as my devotee knows no one but me. But he offended me. I'm a great brahmana, and he ate before me. The Lord became agitated. He didn't eat. He had no material desires. He just took my charanamrita as a religious principle to break his fast. But he's a householder, and I'm a brahmana, and I have so many mystic powers, and he invited me, and then he didn't even respect me. Oh, you're so respectable? He's given up everything for me, his wife, his children, his land, his elephants, his treasury. And what have you given up? You're just attached to your body, although you're in the name of a brahmana. You should know that anyone who has so-called prowess, any mystic powers, if he misuses those mystic powers against a pure devotee, then his own mystic powers become a dangerous thing for him. If one has learning and austerity, oh, that's such an auspicious thing. But when he uses austerity, just like you have by your austerities, you have so many mystic powers, you can fly through the universe, you can fly into the air, under the water, but you use your mystic powers to know that, oh, the king has eaten before me, and now you've tried to kill him. I'll tell you one thing. Anybody who misuses his learning and his austerities and his powers to harm devotees, the subject of the harm becomes destroyed, not the object. So now you see you're just about to be destroyed. If you want freedom from this, then I suggest that you go back to my devotee and beg his forgiveness. So this whole thing took a whole year of running around the universes to Brahma Loka, Shiva Loka, and finally to Vishnu Loka. During that year, Maharaj Ambarish, because he was a humble devotee, even though he was completely faultless, he was blaming himself, thinking, on account of me, this poor brahmana has to suffer. So he fasted the entire year and begged for the freedom of this brahmana. So the brahmana in the meantime went now to Maharaj Ambarish under the order of the Lord. And in the meantime, Maharaj Ambarish was praying to Sudarshan Chakra, if I've any, done any service, any austerities, and the Lord is pleased with me, please save this brahmana. So the brahmana grasped his lotus feet and said, I was trying to kill you, and I see you prayed for my protection. Now I know the glory of the devotee. So the king offered him a beautiful plate of prasadam. Then the sage said to the king, you please eat. So very interestingly enough, this king, he was situated even higher than Prahlad Maharaj, though Prahlad was a brahmi bhakti. He was a shuddha bhakta, fully absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord and internally engaging in the Lord's service in his pastimes. Also interestingly enough, why couldn't that Sudarshan Chakra kill the king, kill the sage even after 1 year? Because he can kill his enemy in a second. He can destroy the universe in a second. It's because Durvasamuni was actually a great sage and pure devotee of the Lord who did this pastime only to establish the greatness of the pure devotion of King Ambarish. So this Srila Gurudev wanted to establish the glory of devotion, the glory of King Ambarish, and the glory of Ekadasi, and the glory of purity, the glory of this stage of pure bhakti. And now Srila Gurudev and his representatives will come to even higher stages of bhakti. Imagine there are even higher stages. Thank you very much.
Well, There was another devotee named Bharat. In Satyayuga, the life of the persons used to be 1 lakh years.
100,000 years.
So he realized in his life, world is nothing. We lose your time in sense gratification and to make this body happy. But no one is happy. So, in his half life, 50,000 years, he left his house, his wife, his children, his whole world's empire and everything, and went to forest. And what became there, and what he realizes, Assam Maharaj will tell in brief.
Om Jnanta Hirandasya Jnanta Shalakaya Chakshur Mitam Deva Tasman Shri Gurve Namaha Panchakamatru Vista Kripasanveva Cha Patitana Pavaneva Vaishnava Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shavikirada Shivasadi Kamakakamrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Srila Gurudev has honored me to speak briefly on the life and teachings of Bharat Maharaj. So we should note that these pastimes which are being described, they're pastimes which are narrated specifically or particularly to Parikshit Maharaj. That Parikshit Maharaj, he was a king about 5,000 years ago, and he had the knowledge that he would leave his body in 7 days. We know that within one of the 7 days, we're going to leave our body. It's either going to be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But within one of these 7 days, we're definitely going to leave our body. So he went to the bank of the Ganges, and he started to hear pastimes. So Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining that the supreme occupation for all people is not to be so much absorbed in material activities, but parodhamo yata bhakti apochite, is to be absorbed in devotional service to the Lord. And in this way the soul will be happy, because we are the Atma. And the most easiest and most powerful way is to hear pastimes of the Lord and pastimes of the devotees of the Lord. So, Shukadeva Goswami, he described to Parikshit Maharaj certain pastimes. And because Parikshit Maharaj was a king, many of the pastimes he described were about people in royal order. So I think that this is very relevant, because we have amongst us our chief guest, Prince Buthalesi. So the pastime I'm about to describe now is about another king. His name was Bharat Maharaj. His father was Maharaj Rishabdev. Maharaj Rishabdev, King Rishabdev, had 100 sons, and chief amongst them was Bharat. So when King Rishabdev, he was of mature age, then he gave up his kingdom to his son Bharat. Bharat also was ruling the kingdom. Gurudev has already explained that in that age, the golden age, people, they lived not for 100 years or 10,000 years, but they had a very, very, very long lifespan of 100,000 years. And in mid-age, here we say 40, 50, but there was 40,000, 50,000 years. That then one should start to retire from one's duties in this world, and one should go to the forest and absorb oneself in spiritual activities. And this was especially the responsibility of the kingly order. That the kingly order, they were meant to rule according to the rules and regulations which they are given in scripture, and they were also meant to lead by example, by showing that human life is not meant just for acquiring so many material things, but human life ultimately is meant for God realization. So Bharat Maharaj has set the example. At 50 years old, he left the kingdom and he went to do meditation. In his meditation, he went through different stages of devotion. In our scriptures, it's explained the step-by-step process of elevation where one comes to the point of pure love of God. Very, very clearly explains that one first has faith, adoshraha, then tathasadhu sangha, associating with devotees. Then, by associating with devotees and engaging in spiritual activities, one's heart gradually becomes cleansed. One becomes fixed in devotional practice. One gets a taste for engaging in devotional activities, attachment, and then bhava, where one, practically speaking, can see the activities that are going on in the spiritual world and also has a realization of who I am. The fact is that we're not Indian, we're not black, we're not South African, we're not American, we're not Indian, we're not Nigerian, we're not any of these designations. We have a transcendental spiritual soul, and that soul has a form. One who goes through the process of self-realization, as given in the Vedic scriptures, then they come to understand not what I am, but who I am. What is my spiritual form? Bharat Maharaj, he had reached the stage of bhava. At this stage of bhava, practically speaking, it's one will not come down again into this material world. But an amazing thing happened. In his meditation, he saw a deer across a stream. And the deer was being chased by a tiger. When the deer started to run from the tiger, the deer jumped over the stream, and the deer was pregnant and had a miscarriage. The deer died, and the little doe was left lying there. He came out of his meditation, and obviously out of compassion, he took this baby doe, and then he started to take care of the doe. So he was absorbed in his meditation, absorbed in spiritual meditation, but now his meditation started to break because he was thinking of this baby deer, the doe. After some time, the deer grew up, and one day the baby deer just ran off with some other deer and was gone. But because Bharat Maharaj, he had started to give so much time to this deer, now he became more attached to the deer, or he became so attached to the deer that his attachment to his spiritual activities, it slackened. So this is a warning, or we should say, giving us a warning, that we should understand that the most important thing in life is our spiritual activities. And that even when we start our spiritual activities and become absorbed in those spiritual activities, that we should have compassion, obviously. We should have compassion for the poor, for the sick, etc. But we should understand also that our main responsibility is how we can ourselves become spiritually advanced and how we can help others advance. Now his meditation broke, and he was, instead of thinking of his the supreme occupation, now he was thinking, oh my dear, oh my dear, oh my dear, oh my dear. So he was thinking of an animal. But we, the ladies, we have to be careful that oh my dear does not become one man. Or the men, especially the sannyasis, that oh my dear does not become one lady. Because that oh my dear, there, and we become absorbed in that. He became so absorbed, what happened? That he left his body absorbed in that form of the deer. In Bhagavad Gita is explained, Yam yam bhavi smaram bhava, chajat yanti kale varam, tam tam ibhati kantiya saratat bhava, bhavi dhaha. That whatever you're thinking about during your life, then ultimately you'll concentrate on that object at the time of death, and that will be very, very prominent in taking you on to your next body. So because he was meditating on a deer, then in his next life he became a deer. So if one is meditating on particular objects, meditating on money, 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 brighter than sunshine, sweeter than honey, how can I make money? Then one may become a bee in honey. We have to be very careful. We have to concentrate and focus our minds on the Supreme Lord. And actually, this is real compassion. Sometimes it seems like it is harsh, but this is ultimate compassion for oneself and for all living entities. Because one who makes spiritual advancement, then by their vibration, just like Srila Gurudev, South Africa is blessed. The planet Earth is blessed. He doesn't have to say a word. Just by his presence, the whole planet is being purified. Srila Gurudev. And this is the ultimate compassion. But I'm saying with words, but I'm not realizing. So Bharat, now he took the body of a deer. But miraculously, though he was in the body of a deer, he could remember his past life. So we understand this process of reincarnation, that when the soul leaves the body, then according to one's past activities, they take on another body. This is there in all religions, and it's there in all cultures. My father's from Nigeria, and I know in Nigeria, also, whether you're Yoruba, Igbo, what have you, there's the understanding of reincarnation. I think here in South Africa, in the cultures, there's also the understanding of reincarnation. If you look even in the Bible, there's a time when Jesus Christ, with his disciples, and then his apostles, and he asked, who do they think I am? And they said, oh, they think maybe you're Elijah, John the Baptist. This was referring that, oh, that soul had taken that body and now had come back as Jesus Christ. So even there in Judaic time, they also had this belief of reincarnation. It is a universal belief. So in the body of a deer, now he was still remembering. So he was thinking that I had the chance. I was practically on the level of perfection. But what happened? I blew it. So what did he do? He went in the body of a deer and he stayed close to saints. And he was hearing their spiritual discussion. This is the most important aspect of spiritual life is sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha. Sava shastra koi, lava macha sadhu sangha. Sava siddhi koi. He went and he just associated, though he had an animal body, and he was hearing the spiritual discourses. And this is why it's so important for us to come and associate and get the association of Srila Gurudev. Because by this association, then we become free from the attachments of this material world and we become attached to the spiritual. So by this association, finally, the deer also gave up his life and then he took birth as
Brahmin.
Brahmin.
As a Brahmin.
Dumb.
That he was dumb.
No, he was pretending.
He was actually very, very intelligent. But he understood that because I blew it in two lives before, that now let me be dumb to this world, but let me be totally alert to my spiritual activity. So he acted as a Dalit. As a Dalit, he had his brothers, and they were very, very adept at performing their material activities, but Jad, he couldn't do anything properly. So what happened? He got taken away. One time, there was a king. His name was Maharaj Rahugana. And Maharaj Rahugana was on a palanquin being carried by four men. One of the palanquin carriers, he became sick. They needed somebody else. And then walking, they found this Dalit. And they said, oh, he looks very strong, very stout. And immediately they took him and they had him carry the palanquin. As the palanquin was going, all of a sudden, Maharaj Rahugana's palanquin started to rock left and then right and then forward and back. And he said, what is going on? Oh, you palanquin choir, what is wrong with you? He said, no, it's not me. It's this new palanquin carrier right here. And then Maharaj Rahugana, he looked at him, and Judd, he was very, very tall, very broad, and very strong. So he said, more than Balaram. So then he said, oh, you look very thin, very skinny, very weak. I see that you have a problem carrying this palanquin. So then Judd, Bharat, then he replied to him. He said that, oh, so you're thinking that I am thin or I am big, but you should understand that I am not this body, I am the soul. And you're thinking that you're in a very high position because you're the king and I'm just a carrier. But you do not know that you have achieved this position because of your karma, your past and pious activities. And in the next life, I could be the king, and you could be the carrier. All this due to illusion, you're going on and thinking that you're such a big personality. And he spoke in this way, and then Maharaj Brahmanda realized this person is not a dullard, that he's a highly, not only intelligent, but a realized soul. He asked, who are you? How is it that you've achieved this knowledge? That are you some great sage, Kapil, etc.? And then Jat Bharat, he said, you know, in your dynasty, there was a king. He was son of King Rishabdev, Bharat Maharaj. Do you remember? He said, yes. He said, I am he. But now, going through the process of reincarnation, I have taken this body. So then Maharaj Rahugna, I'll end it very quickly. Maharaj Rahugna, then he started understanding that he was speaking with a very elevated soul. Then he understood that he should inquire. That when one comes in contact with a highly elevated soul, then one should inquire. But not inquire about how I can get money, how I can get wealth, how I can get health. But how can I be free from my material misconceptions of life, and how can I achieve the goal of love of God? So he said, you're saying that the soul is different from the body, but I think that the soul is suffering when the body suffers. And he gave an example. That you have rice in the pot. You have the pot, you have water, you have rice, you have the fire. When the fire is heating the water, then the rice, then it starts to boil, then it becomes ready to eat. He said the rice, this is like the soul. He said the water, you can say it's like the subtle body, mind, intelligence, false ego. The pot is like the gross body. So when one is suffering in this world, suffering the fire of material existence, the rice, the soul, we're feeling the pain. How can you say that we're not feeling pain? Then Jat Bharat explained to him that this pain is only coming due to illusion because we are identifying with the body. An example, that just as you have a coconut, when that coconut is still green, then the pulp is attached to the inside. But when that coconut, it becomes dry, the pulp inside shrinks, and you can shake it, and you can just say, crum, 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 crum. It's loose. In the same way, the self-realized soul, who is dry, he's dried up his desire to enjoy within this material world. He's completely separated from the body. So whatever sufferings are coming to the body, whatever sufferings are coming to the mind, he knows that this is not me. That due to my past karmic activities, these sufferings are coming, but I am different from this. And in this way, he's transcendental to all the problems of this world. So in this way, Jat Bharat explained to him, what is the real solution of happiness? That not necessarily that you just be free from all sufferings, but you transcend the sufferings. And then he explained to him that, oh, Maharaj Raghunath, that, what is that verse? That, oh Maharaj Raghunath, that how can one achieve this stage of self-realization where we understand we're not the body, where we understand that we're not black, we're not white, we're not Indian, we're not South African, we're not any of these designations. He said that it will not come by going just by going to holy places and taking bath. It will not come by performing so many austerities. Just as in India, you have sages in heat of the sun, 50 degrees, they'll be burning fire and they'll be in the middle doing meditation. Or when it's below zero, they go into water and they take bath. Not by this type of austerity, not by performing your duties in married life perfectly. How does it come? It comes by taking the foot dust, which is coming from the lotus feet of pure devotees, and smearing. What does this mean? What is the importance of taking the dust of the lotus feet? It is stated, Bhakta Pada Duli, Bhakta Pada Jal, Bhakta Bhuk Abhishesh, Tin Mahabal. That these three things, Bhakta Pada Duli, especially the dust which is coming from the lotus feet of a sadhu, that it is very, very powerful, that the moods of the sadhu, that they're there. But how will these moods come into our heart? That comes by surrendering. Shu 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 Sharadana Syam, Vasudeva Katavichi, Syam Mahat Sevyadhi Prabh, Punya Tendra Shema. By surrendering to such sadhus and serving such sadhus, then taking the dust from their lotus. difficult to speak. Then those moods gradually come into the heart, and one becomes purified, and then one becomes free from all designations, and gradually comes to the platform of pure love of God. So here it's explained that this is the duty of all, and especially it is the duty of leaders of society. So I remember when I first became a devotee, when Prince Buthelezi, he was there for the opening of the Shishi Radha Raghunath Temple in Chatsworth. I was in England, but I remember very distinctly, with great pride. And through the decades, you've been there with us in our different activities. So in setting the example for the people of South Africa, it would be very good, it would be fantastic, it would be wonderful if you surrender to the lotus feet of Srila Gurudev and take initiation. And then, Prince Buthelezi Ki! So we have to talk
about it. Today our classes are finished. Some dance will be.
Dance? Yeah, dance.